Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 2nd, 2021. The UN African Union hybrid mission in Darfur closes down its offices.
The main beneficiaries, in fact, were the local communities and the IDPs, and the team site was supposed to be served as vocational training centers, education center, clinics, health centers, or community activities centers.
And community leaders in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state discourage young men from attacking non-governmental organizations.
I managed yesterday to talk to people, and I read a letter to them. They were really surprised because what they had requested is not what was written in the letter.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Security Council voted last year to end the hybrid UN African Union civilian support operation for Darfur, known as UNAMID. The joint United Nations African Union mission in Darfur announced the closure of its office on Thursday and handed more than a dozen sites to local authorities in Darfur. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Mbaye Babacar Cisse, UN Assistant Secretary General, says the repatriation of equipment and staff from Darfur was completed over the past 4 months. He says UNAMID handed over 14 sites to local Sudanese government officials in accordance with the framework agreement signed on March 4th between UNAMID and the government of Sudan.
The main beneficiaries, in fact, were the local communities and the IDPs, and the team site was supposed to be served as vocational training centers. Centers, education center, clinics, health centers, or community activities centers.
The senior UN diplomat says 8 of the 14 sites were looted completely by some members of the local community in Darfur. Babacar says, despite challenges, some sites have been well utilized and are now serving locals again.
I may say that Zalenji is and Kalma are best practices, in the sense that Zalenji is now the University of Zalenji, and they were early occupation of the site by the university that prevent looting. Kalma is also a best practice, in the sense that Kalma was transferred to the IDPs, and now they are the one managing Kalma as a health center.
Babacar says authorities in Darfur should ensure the safety of the sites to benefit the local communities. He says the UNAMID managed to repatriate peacekeeping equipment to their respective countries, as well as 6,000 staff who were there since December 2020.
Sustaining peace required that we provide also direct support to local communities and IDPs. In this context, we supported 500 quick impact projects in the country, as well as a community stabilization program. We had, at the end of December 2021, programmatic activities, as well as state liaison project that was implemented by UN agency that was not completed because of the COVID crisis that affected the operations.
Babacar says the transitional government in Sudan now has the responsibility to protect civilians against attacks in Darfur.
One of the main ones is about the protection of civilians, and that is the concern to all of us. But at the same time, the government is committed to putting together a joint forces to protect to local communities, and the UN will continue to support in that end, but we will no longer have a physical protection mandate.
The UN official says over the past 13 years, the mission managed to support local authorities in building 15 prosecution offices, 19 district courts, and 14 prisons across Darfur. He says the UN African Union hybrid mission also supported educational programs for children and empowered women in Darfur. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to northern Bahr al-Ghazal state, where four paramount chiefs of Awil West County in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state who signed a petition addressed to humanitarian organizations protesting what they call unfair recruitment and employment procedures now say some young men who authored the letter tricked the four chiefs into signing the document. The chiefs have distanced themselves from the complaints in the petition. For VOA News, Onan Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
In a petition dated June 21st, signed by four paramount chiefs of Awil West County, several young men from the county asked humanitarian organizations to respond to their complaints about employment opportunities in the country. Dong Luo Layat, deputy governor of Northern Barangay State, says some young men took advantage of the chiefs, who are illiterate, to sign a petition addressed to eight agents.
I managed yesterday to talk to them, and I read a letter to them. They were really surprised because what they had requested is not what was written in the letter. The chief understood what was written in the letter because they don't read and write. So those individuals who wrote a letter did not read to them the negative part.
Paramount Chief Dut Majak admits he signed the letter but says the young men assured him they were requesting a proportion of 80% of the workforce in the NGOs to go to locals, which is in line with the South Sudan NGO Act.
Those two individuals were identified yesterday. These are youth. These two individuals, we shall never stand with them anymore. We, the community of Nyamlel of Awil West, are staying peacefully with the NGOs. Even if they do not get work, we cannot expel them. How can we chase them? Our village is a village of peace. Our youth are now thieves.
Ayat says South Sudan is part and parcel of the international community, and he appealed to the young men to respect the rights of expatriates as well as locals working in the state.
We don't want to segregate the workers that came from other states, because we are in one country, and in our constitution, all the citizens of South Sudan are supposed to move freely to work anywhere in the country without restriction.
The commissioner of Awil West County, Stephen Wiu, and the deputy governor say two suspects were detained this week and will be arraigned in court over the weekend to deter future threats on eight workers and NGOs in the state.
As the acting governor of Northern Barghazal State, I am here to protect all the lives of humanitarian workers that are working in my state. I have promised to the international donors that are funding the project in Northern Barghazal State, we are here to protect the life of the humanitarian workers in this area. I want to tell them that they should not panic.
Earlier this week, a local vigilant group in Eastern Equatorial State known as Monyumiji warned eight agencies to stop employing foreigners in the state, prompting state officials to declare a curfew. The group from Eastern Equatoria also asked South Sudanese from other parts of the country working with aid agencies in Eastern Equatoria State to leave immediately. Deputy Governor Ayat says state authorities plan to hold a rally in Nyamlel, the capital of Awil West County, to raise awareness about the importance of NGO work in the communities across Northern Barangay State. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
Still on aid agencies, UN agencies warn of looming humanitarian catastrophe in northern Ethiopia's Tigray region if they are prevented from delivering life-saving assistance to the stricken area. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The Ethiopian government's tenuous unilateral ceasefire in Tigray after 8 months of conflict has not got off to a good start. The UN Refugee Agency reports the electrical power and phone networks in its offices in the capital, Mekele, are not functioning, hampering its ability to deliver humanitarian aid. The UN Children's Fund has condemned the pillaging of its video equipment Monday by members of the Ethiopian National Defense Forces, warning 140,000 acutely malnourished children were at risk of dying without urgent nutritional treatment. The World Food Program is demanding full access to Tigray to deliver life-saving food assistance to millions of hungry people. Among them, it says, are 500,000 children, women, and men who face starvation over the coming months. The World Health Organization reports the region's health system has collapsed. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says WHO can do little to help the beleaguered population because access to the area is extremely limited.
We are obviously concerned about potential for cholera, measles, and malaria outbreaks in the region. In addition, Tigray region is also located in the meningitis belt, and it is at the risk of yellow fever outbreaks. People are also at risk of death from lack of access to health services to treat any other diseases that may have.
Despite the ceasefire, fighting continues in Tigray. Jazarevich says WHO is taking measures to strengthen the security and well-being of its staff. He says efforts to provide essential health care is ongoing where it is possible to do so. However, he adds, what WHO staff can do does not approach the enormity of the needs.
Now, with hospitals that are barely functioning, people being displaced, and the looming famine, the risk of communicable and vaccine-preventable diseases spreading due to the lack of food, clean water, safe shelter, and access to healthcare is very real. And all these factors combined are literally a recipe for larger epidemics.
WHO reports an estimated 3.5 million people are at risk of cholera. It says 6 million people are vulnerable to malaria, especially malnourished children. It says they are at particular risk of dying from this deadly vector-borne disease. An oral cholera vaccine campaign targeting 2 million people, which began on June 12th, was only able to reach 50% of the targeted population. WHO reports this was due to the conflict and difficulty in reaching the region's widely spread population by road. The agency reports attacks on healthcare, the looting and destruction of cold chain, the system used for storing vaccines correctly, and the general dangers posed by the warring parties has had a harmful impact on this life-saving operation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, how has the separatist conflict in Cameroon affected the population of the country? That story is coming up right after the break.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Mudu. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. There has been widespread condemnation in Cameroon of the killing and beheading of government troops and civilians, including an influential cleric, by suspected separatist fighters. Cameroon state officials say the month of June was the bloodiest this year, with more than 40 people killed and 70 houses torched. For VOA News, Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military says it was involved in at least 30 heavy gun battles with separatists in June. A military spokesman said Anglophone rebels massacred several dozen civilians and tried to blame the military. The statement by Army Captain Cyril Serge Atongfang Gemu also said 3 troops were killed and beheaded in Bamali, an English-speaking northwestern village, 2 weeks ago. Atongfang said on Cameroon State Radio CRTV that many army vehicles were destroyed, but did not give details on how many troops were killed. Local media such as Vision 4 TV and Canal 2 International reported that at least 40 troops, separatist fighters and civilians were killed in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions in June. Deben Chofo is governor of Cameroon's northwest region. He says several civilians, including a Muslim cleric, were accused of collaborating with the military and beheaded. Chofo says many civilians were killed by homemade bombs that are increasingly used by separatist fighters. Chofo says he has ordered the military to adopt different strategies to respond to new forms of separatist attacks, such as the use of improvised bombs that cause huge casualties among civilians and government troops. He says the military has been deployed to stop fighters. He says village chiefs, the clergy, and militias created by civilians should assist the military by sharing information on possible separatist hideouts. Chofo said it will be difficult for the military to restore peace if civilians refuse to collaborate with the military for fear of being targeted by separatist fighters. Capo Daniel is a self-proclaimed deputy defense chief of the Ambazonian Defense Forces, a rebel group in Cameroon's western regions. He says fighters have reviewed their strategy and are increasingly planting bombs on roads used by the military.
It has been close to a year now since the Cameroon military introduced armored personnel carriers and armored vehicles. So our forces on the ground have adapted and are now using improvised explosive devices to target those armored personnel carriers and armored vehicles. We have used those weapons in Kumbu, in Melem, in Jakiri, in Kar, in Takija area there going towards Ndu. We are in the middle of a war.
Cameroon's military said it detonated 30 IEDs planted by fighters in 14 northwestern towns and villages, including Melim, Jakiri, and Kar. Civilians said the military torched houses in villages and towns where bombs were planted, accusing civilians of collaborating with fighters by not reporting them. The military said it remained professional and accused separatist fighters of what it called atrocities. Cameroonian NGOs, churches and political parties, including the Opposition Social Democratic Front and the ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, have condemned the killing and beheading. The SDF described June as the bloodiest month this year in Cameroon. Fabrice Lena is Secretary General of the Popular Action Party and coordinator of the NGO African People's Foundation, which protects civilians in conflict. He blames both the military and separatist fighters for abuses on civilians.
Violence in all its forms should be condemned. Beheading is gross human rights violation. And we have to understand that whatsoever thing that people do, they are going to face the law, face justice, because we are very sure that we are going to set up the Truth, Justice and Reconciliation Commission that will investigate into the crimes that have been committed by whosoever. So we condemn all sorts of killings, violence, beheading and burning of houses by separatists or military. It's unacceptable.
Violence erupted in 2017 in Cameroon's English-speaking regions when teachers and lawyers protested alleged discrimination at the hands of the French-speaking majority. The United Nations says 3,000 people have been killed and more than 750,000 displaced in Cameroon's French-speaking towns and in neighboring Nigeria. The Norwegian Refugee Council reports that Cameroon tops its annual list of the world's most neglected displacement crisis. Moki Edwin Kinsuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
We love to hear what you think about this show. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thanks, John. As usual, we heard from many of you this week about criminal activity in Lake State and Jungulay State. James Mandit Malwaj in Arua, Uganda writes, I thank VOA for their great work of updating us with news about our region, South Sudan, and the world at large. I'm also urging the South Sudanese government to intervene in Lake State, where there is rampant killing and looting of others' possessions among the communities living there. The solution is disarming the civilians and mobilizing them into some economic activities such as cultivation and trade, rather than depopulating the country meaninglessly. Jacob Dior Machweng from Ural Lake State says, "The spirit of revenge has not reduced in Greater Lake State, though the communities are aware the new appointed governor is a no-nonsense fellow. The sun never sets without death cases in the state. I urge the governor to come home without changing the spirit he had during the consultative meeting in Juba. Otherwise, the politicians of Lakes are canny. They can twist what was agreed and advise him differently. We need an eye for an eye in Lake State." Hilary Dani from Kampala says, "The armed youth in Lake State are rebels. The government must declare them so." Diwamoy Daniel in Juba writes, "South Sudan is experiencing a lot of mayhem. Killings in Lake State and other parts of the country is becoming the order of the day. Munyomiji in Torid are coming up with another tragedy where they give a 3-day ultimatum to NGOs helping the vulnerable in Greater Torid to leave the area. I wonder where our beloved country is heading. Are these the signs of the end of time? We have never witnessed such in the history of this great nation. May God grant us peace, love, and unity." Mangwag Majong from Rombek Lake State says, "My dear South Sudanese youth across the country, let us be wise in taking actions on the issue of unemployment. Let's also remember that no South Sudanese citizen in this country is a foreigner to be restricted from working in any state in this country. If we continue with this act, then we are unknowingly victimizing our vulnerable people who are living through humanitarian aid and services, which we shall later regret. I advise the Munyomiji youth group in Eastern Equatoria State and beyond to stop this unethical an unprofessional act." Madid Malith Butich from Awerial, South Sudan says, "The deliberate abduction of women collecting firewood and water is an unforgivable crime against humanity. We men should treat women as our mothers, wives, sisters, and daughters rather than subjecting them to being victims all the time. I appreciate Jungle Estate for the great work being done." Malesh Bosco from Yei says, "I'm not happy about the killing of our South Sudanese because of cattle raids. Does it mean that South Sudan is the only country in the region which you have pastoral lists? Why can't the government use a policy like what our neighboring countries like Uganda and Kenya did to their cattle keepers to stop the killing of innocent people?" Isaac Tang Dak in Bentiu Town writes, "It has been a positive move in the right direction for UNMIS Civil Affairs Division in Bentiu Town for training the youth to create awareness across the state about the dangers of killing themselves and cattle raiding. But community leaders need to be involved in the process if we can expect a positive impact, since the leaders know some of the root causes of this dilemma. Thanks to all the great work, VOA team." Daniel from Juba writes, "I'm very pleased with the statement made by General Chief of Staff for SPLM-IO that there is no implementation of the peace agreement. Bravo, Comrade Gatwich." Peter Data of Zone 4, Village 3, Abiria Majo, Bidibidi Refugee Settlement says, "COVID-19 has caused four things in the settlement. Hunger, since food rations have been reduced by 60%. Education, which is affecting the children's generation. Poverty, which affects many families. And women and children, who are the most vulnerable group of people living in the settlement. As leaders, we do awareness to the community members by megaphone on COVID-19, domestic violence, child negligence, teenage pregnancy, and early marriage in the settlement, and encourage people to put on their masks, social distance, wash their hands with soap and water." Peter Gojanyang Majongdul in Haijakor, Pibor Town says, "I am appealing to the Munyomiji to follow the rightful way in addressing their needs. Taking the law into their hands in Eastern Equatoria is bad, as residents of Torid are now living in fear from their own sons. This is totally unlawful." Tong Chuniyok Kwai from Juba writes, "To me, the restriction will affect the business people who are not involved in youth activities. I think the Eastern Equatoria State Governor failed to solve the problem between youth and UN workers and NGO workers in the state, because youths are under the state authorities." Peter Ajak Ayom in Block 3, Bor, Jungle Estate says, I would like to take this opportunity to appreciate Honorable Salva Kiir Mayardit, the President of the Republic of South Sudan and Chairman of Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, and the Government of South Sudan for taking the development of roads as the first priority amidst its difficult time of political differences, communal conflicts, and economic hardship. Mr. President, the construction of the Juba Bor to Malakal Highway have given the people of Greater Upper Nile the SPLM vision of taking town to the people rather than taking people to the towns. There has never been a road like this since the days of Adam and Eve. All the roads connecting people to the capital city Juba have to be constructed to show equal development. Roads from Juba Yei, Meridi, Yambio Tumbura, Juba, Munduri, Rumbek, Wau, Awil, Abyei, and the rest. You deserve more credit, my president. The second priority is health. Lastly, my thanks goes to VOA for letting us connect with the rest of the world. And Joseph Awier in Juba writes, hello John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. I am really happy to reconnect with VOA South Sudan in Focus. My message to our common citizens in Lake State, this intercommunal conflict will not take us anywhere, but we should better go for peace, unity, reconciliation and prosperity as South Sudanese because our image is totally lost internationally. But let's restrain it back to those days. To Honorable Governor, please take the strongest initiative to reunite the communities in Greater Lakes and ensure peace is paramount in the state as it was before. We know you're a strong man and a man of his word. Let us see peace and harmony in your administration, and we urge the national government to support you and stand behind you to make sure peace prevails in Lake State. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. Keep those comments coming.
Thanks, Nabil. Keep your brief comments coming and we will air them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you today when I leave you with the song Rafiki by Mr. Nice.
Kelele za chura zimnyimi tembo kunywa maji na dua la kuku halimpati wewe utalijua jiji wewe sikujua kama rafiki yangu huyu ni bonge la nyoka tena niti anayejifanya yeye mwanafundo tena anang'ata na kupuliza fu kama panya kukua. Ananifuata urafiki huu ni urafiki gani bona ni wa utata lakini yona mimi nanifuata likiwa pembeni la paka.
We have been listening to Mr. Nice with the song Rafiki. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
kuchoka lakini sikio alizidi kichwa. Oh, 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 oh. Hey, hey.